I'm Cameron Crookston.
And I'm Patrick Murray.
And this is Video Queens,
the show where two queens take a look back at the movies that made them.
And this week we watched To Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything, Jui Newmar.
And Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
It is a Say Something Hat Day.
There are two things I don't like about you, Felicia. Your thighs.
What you have to do to your mouth to make an Australian accent, you like, it's this like sneer where you have to like lift all of your lip, gets so high up your nostrils and you're just like baring your teeth.
Oh yeah, I'm a drag queen from Sydney. Let's go on a road trip. It's bad too. It's like, I think that like you have to look, I have to look, this deformed to then do like a weird bad Australian accent.
There's another podcast I listened to, and they did an episode where they each went around saying what their root word was for an Australian accent. So now I use it, and it's Laserdisc Keitha Sutherland.
That wasn't an Australian accent.
Keitha Sutherland.
Why are you doing, you're doing Jewish mother again?
There are two things I don't like about you, Felicia. Your face.
Okay.
Whatever, I can do all the accents into Wong Fu.
Okay. Yeah, so we did a late night double feature picture show this episode, which is great because I know when we talked about this, it was like, oh, like maybe we'll do them both together because they're the same movie. Mm-hmm. However, doing them both together has meant I finished the second one. I think the second one I watched was To Wong Fu. Okay. And I was like, oh, it's actually very different from Priscilla. Now, not so much. And it's only been an hour. Like the bleeding of these two movies, which is exactly what happened before. Like I think of them, I kind of like put parts of one in the other. Like I'm like, oh yeah, when Coco Peru was in Priscilla and like,
I can keep them pretty straight in my head only because I saw To Wong Fu came out when I was like 12 and I saw it in theaters. I think I was just
but an embryo.
No, you were alive. You were definitely alive. So like, yeah, I saw it in theaters. It was like, I had a lot of nostalgia for it. And I don't think I saw To Wong Fu till I was, or to, I don't think I saw Priscilla.
Okay. Yeah. You're doing great.
I'm really selling
it. I don't find it that difficult.
I didn't see Priscilla until I was probably in my 20s and I didn't like it as much. It took me a while to warm up to it because I was comparing it to Wong Fu and I did find it in the same way that like Diet Coke and Coke Zero are radically different. It's the same. It's like, oh, these could not be more different.
Well, and I think it makes sense. Like the Australian sensibility takes some adjusting to. Mm-hmm. Like I'll step in front of the truck and say the first time I saw Muriel's Wedding, I was like, the fuck is this? I hate this. I'm like, why is this drama so weird?
Why is this comedy so sad?
I also haven't seen it a second time and I've just decided I liked it.
Definitely the cultural differences. Also that Priscilla is an indie movie. And To Wong Fu is like a big, like blockbuster Hollywood. It's very formulaic. We're getting way ahead of ourselves. I think let's do two plots for two movies.
The plot thickens and widens.
Oh my! Do you want to go first?
Sure. So Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, is a drag romp in the Australian bush.
You could have said outback, but you said bush.
And by that, I do mean pubic hair. okay, so I think I have the names. So we have Tick, aka Mitzi, is one of the queens. Then we have Felicia. And then we have Bernadette. So the three of them are queens in Sydney, and Mitzi presents like a very sus offer to the girls of like, hey, wanna come with me to like the middle of dead fucking nowhere, Australia, and do a gig. Don't worry, it's equity, it's paying. And even though I've seen the movie before, I thought the gig wasn't real until they got there. I still need to know if they got paid or not, because it's questionable. So they decide to set out on a bus. They get like an RV. They christen it Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. And they are like venturing into the Australian bush. They decide to take a dirt road. And you guessed it, it breaks down. So they have like some interactions with locals, some good, some hate crime. And then they do eventually find their way to the gig that is also, spoiler alert, Mitzi's straight wife. And the gig that they got is Mitzi's straight wife, and their child is also there. Bernadette is presented to, Bernadette is seemingly trans. So that's awesome. We have like, also unlike Tu Wong Fu, two of the characters aren't in drag the whole time. They sometimes put on drag and then take it off. Whereas Bernadette is like living her life. It's also, it's like a bit of a love story, and it's just like a really fun, like it's just like three very flamboyant personalities on a road trip. What could be better?
Tu Wong Fu, on the other
hand, for everything, Julie Newmar.
Tu Wong Fu, thanks for everything, Julie Newmar, which I will just call Tu Wong Fu because she is a mouthful. Sex joke.
Tu Wong Fu.
So Tu Wong Fu is...
because two Wongs don't make a right.
Listen, I let you ramble on about your Australian nonsense.
So all I've let you say is the title.
Did not get through the title. You've cut me off twice. So Tu Wong Fu is the story of three drag queens on a cross-country trip. The show, the movie starts with a New York-based drag pageant. And the two queens who win are Vida Boheme and Noxzema Jackson, who are played respectively by Patrick Swayze and Wesley Snipes. After they are kind of crowned co-winners, their prize is they get to fly to Los Angeles to basically compete at nationals. And they ran into Chichi Rodriguez, who was one of the finalists who didn't win, and she's crying, and they call her a little Latin boy in drag. It's John Leguizamo. And they decide they are going to kind of adopt her as their little protege and teach her how to be a real drag queen. And they trade in their plane ticket and drive across the country in a busted down Cadillac that looks really good. Surprise, surprise, the Cadillac breaks down and they find themselves stranded in this like dusty little town that has about five buildings in it, we establish at some point. And they're stuck there for about 3 days amongst the locals. The locals are sad and gray and depressed. Some of them can't speak. Some of them are trapped in violent domestic situations. Some of them just want love. And in the 2.5 days in which the queens are trapped in this town, they give every single citizen a makeover of both personality and fashion. They literally go door to door, fix everyone's life, mostly through drag and a little through violence.
Yeah.
Along the way, Chi-Chi, who is kind of, you know, she's bratty, she's younger than the other two, she's kind of selfish. She actually learns to be a little less selfish, and she has a little bit of an awakening. And then when they all drive away, they go to the, you know, Los Angeles national thing, and Chi-Chi ends up winning. Oh, I forgot about the dead cop. Oh,
I was going to say they're also being followed around by a cop that was maybe killed by pushing. they get pulled over near the beginning, and he is coming on to Vida, played by Patrick Swayze, who pushes him, and they think that he may be dead.
He falls over, and in their defense, it does knock him out, and just being pushed over by Patrick Swayze knocks him out. So Chi-Chi takes his pulse and says, well, he's dead. Although to be fair, she says, don't quote me, but I think he might be deceased. And she told us not to quote her. And they walk around quoting her all day.
They did quote her a lot. Also, he was like, it's not like from this, again, literal push. He is knocked out seemingly until like the police, like hours later, come and find him and are like, no, I think we've got a live one. Like he's in the, okay.
Listen, he hit his head or something. I'm no physicist. And this is, you know what? In this movie, this is not going to be the biggest test of your sense of disbelief, okay? That if you can't deal
with
Sheriff Dullard getting knocked out from a push, you're going to have a lot more challenges coming your
way. It's Dullard.
It's a misprint.
It's a misprint.
Right, so they are being kind of hunted by this sheriff who, like, very Cinderella moment, because Vita leaves a shoe at the scene of the crime, and then he kind of runs around, I don't know what state they're in, Virginia, I'm going to say. It's got a kind of a Virginia vibe.
He said they say it's West Virginia. They're like, oh, we just saw someone without any teeth. We must be in West Virginia. But then they guess that, and he says, oh, you're a long way from West Virginia.
So they're in Anytown, USA. Everyone is vaguely Southern, but not too Southern. So you know it's not Texas.
Yeah.
And at the end, Chef Dullard does find them. And so everyone the whole time has been believing that they are cis biological women. And Chef Dullard comes and says, there are drag queens here. Don't protect them. Send them out and I will kill them. And then the whole town gets together and they all have an I am Spartacus moment. They come together and they say, I'm a drag queen. No, I'm a drag queen. There is this like delightful little old lady who has this great line where she's like, can I have my shoe? And Dullard says, are you a drag queen? And she says, nothing this pretty could be real. It's a great line. And then they drive off into the sunset. Chi-Chi wins best drag queen. And that's Tong Fu.
Okay, so this is where the movies started to combine for me, was that, like, I knew from Priscilla, so at the end of Priscilla, Bernadette chooses to stay behind. Like, she's like, I'm gonna give this life a go with this guy, like, either Ralph or George or Bob.
It's Bob.
Is it Bob?
It's Bob.
Great, okay.
Did you mention Bob in the synopsis? Maybe you should break down who Bob is.
Oh, Bob is, like, a gentleman that they meet along the way. He takes them in. He's like helping them when they're just like stuck in the desert. He's gonna help try to fix their camper.
Wait, he's the mechanic.
He divorces his wife, who's the ping pong artist.
The other thing about Bob is that when he kind of takes him to their house and says, like, you know, what do you, your performers, what do you do? And Guy Pearce, who plays Felicia, says, you know, we're drag queens. And then Bob says, like Lay's girls. And it turns out that Bernadette back in the day used to be in this like drag review that was like moderately famous in Australia. And Bob is a fangirl.
Yes. And so Bob worships the dolls.
He does. He's very respectful.
He's very respectful. And so, and it ends with Bernadette being like, I'm actually going to stay behind. Like, I'm going to give this a go.
Yeah.
So then it's like with different love pairings, and like I was like, oh, right. And then Vida, aka Patrick Swayze, chooses to stay behind with Stockard Channing and enters like a heterosexual relationship with her. Like, I really thought that was coming. There are, I think, definitely, obviously, like, watching both back to back, it really makes it so confronting how much like in the world of Priscilla, they get clocked a lot for being drag queens. Like, everyone sees them and is like, hey, drag queen, like, we don't want drag queens here. And like, obviously they might call them something different, but like, that's the vibe. Tu Wong Fu is somehow existing in a world where no one clocks that they are drag queens. Until the very, except for the police officer who literally grabs Vita's crotch and realizes from that. And Stockard Channing at the very end is like, no, you have an Adam's apple. Ladies don't have Adam's apples.
It turns out she's known the whole time.
She's known the whole time. And you're like, she's the only one who's known the whole time?
Yeah, there's a lot of
Wesley Snipes is not is not landing like fresh tilapia.
No.
Like, no. I actually, okay. And I will say, like, of all of them, John Leguizamo is fantastic in Tu Wong Fu. I think, like, the breakout star for me.
Oh, interesting. I personally, you know what, and this, I think this speaks to who we relate to because you're such a Chi-Chi. Yeah, that's a read. And I'm a Vita, so I can say that. No, to me,
Vita is more of like Chi-Chi Devane.
Who's named after Chi-Chi Rodriguez.
Oh.
Rest in power. I really like Patrick Swayze in this because, yeah, Patrick Swayze, like, even when I was younger, he was the one that I truly forgot I was not watching a female character.
Okay.
I think they're all, like...
You were sipping the Kool-Aid in Smithtown or wherever the fuck they were.
I think he does such a good job. I think he, like, really plays the character with like, he plays it like a serious character. Plays it with, like, a surprising amount of depth. The movements are really... Like, I think because he's a dancer... He gets the movements really, really well.
Yes, I will say I don't know if they filmed the movie chronologically or like I was like, it seemed to take Wesley Snipes a while to like get into it.
Right.
Like either I start to like to just be like, yeah, no, you're a drag queen. But on the, I don't know, because then on the Priscilla side, I bought Bernadette the whole time as like a trans woman.
Right. Maybe this is a good time to pivot into a specific comparison, which is the way, I mean, part of this is about realism and part of this is also the way the two movies kind of depict different gender roles or fail to. Yeah, because Priscilla is very, and it's funny because I feel like audiences have come full circle on Priscilla. Because I feel, I mean, I don't know about like in the early 90s, but definitely I remember watching this in the mid to early 2000s. And there were so many question marks around, they're all drag queens, but Bernadette's trans. How does that work? That's not allowed. How is this possible? Mm. And of course, now that we live in a post-Got Mick America, we just like know how that works. It's like, no, yeah, absolutely.
Right, right.
Whereas... Into Wong Fu, as you've already alluded to, and the thing that like whenever I show someone this movie, the first thing they say is like, why don't they ever take off their drag?
Yeah, them sitting around the pool in the full drag and
them
like,
going to bed in like they change, yes, like, at the end of the day they change into bedtime drag and then sleep in their in new bedtime wigs at the end of the pageant. In the beginning they're in these like huge ball gowns with these giant wigs, and then Noxzema and Vita change into like casual street drag with like leather jackets and like kitten wigs. And like, yeah, it is. I mean, when there is a scene where they're kind of like before they've gotten to like Dust Bowl Town, when they have to stop at a hotel and they're like, they're really nervous to go in because they're like, you know, like this could get violent. We know how this goes. And it's like, you could take off your wigs. Like it's never considered a possibility, yes, that they could ever even try to pass or that they could ever not be drag queens. And that's the thing. And the crazy thing too, is there is a little line where Noxzema, Wesley Snipes, explains quote unquote the difference between,
yes,
again, it's 1995. He uses the term transvestite, transsexual and drag queen. And I have it here. Yeah. And he says, for all the children, when a straight man puts on a dress and gets his sexual kicks, he is a transvestite. When a man is a woman trapped in a man's body and has a little operation, he is a transsexual. And when a gay man has way too much fashion sense for one gender, he is a drag queen. Snap, snap. Which is like not, which correct, fine. Which I mean, like kind of sort of more or less. The thing about like transvestite, yeah, being like a fetish is pretty dated.
And transsexual, like necessitating an operation. And it's like, yes, of course, of course. In general terms, we get what we're nodding at, though.
Yeah, like at different points in history, those things have been more or less true for a minute. But I think the interesting thing is that I think what we now know, again, thank you, Got Mick, and like so many trans drag queens who have done so much labor on Drag Race, is the idea that like, you know, cis and trans are gender identities and a drag queen is, you know, a career/performance style.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing about this movie is that in this movie, drag queen is depicted as a social identity.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, it wasn't until the end of the movie that I was like, I should rewatch this and just decide that they're all trans. Like, because I'm like, is, again, when I didn't know, I'm like, is, again, when I combined the endings and I'm like, well, Vida's about to say goodbye to them and live her full life as a woman with Stalker Channing. Like, yeah, it was, once they start to, yeah, as you said, like, obviously they're not performing. Like, they're just existing in this town, but it is always in drag. And there's not a reason. It's not like, oh, like, it's not like, I don't know. I'm trying to think of something where
we lost the suitcase with our boy clothes, so we have to wear drag.
Yeah, or like, we're on the lam, so like, we have to be in our drag characters or they'll find us.
Yeah.
Like, it was just like, oh, no, like, this is...
it is never questioned. Here's why I think they do it, and I think this is more about the fact that this was a mainstream Hollywood movie, and it was very much marketed to a mainstream public. I think it is a simplification for the audience, and I think it's very much a, listen, if we keep switching back between Patrick and Vida, people are never going to buy this illusion. The only way we're going to be able to sell these as both cohesive and sympathetic characters is if it's like singular. It's a little different, but it's kind of the same way that on Drag Race, they never use their boy name.
Yeah, I thought that too, of like, if we're going to get Wesley Snipes to put on a gown and be in drag, and same for Patrick Swayze, like, it's so interesting. Like, again, like, it's like drag. Like, that's why we love drag. Like, it's like, it's a feast for like the senses. Mm-hmm. So it's like, well, that's the most interesting part is them in drag. So guess we'll keep them in drag the whole time. Like, why not?
Yeah. I think too, it probably like, again, for like most of the production company was queer, but I think kind of like worrying about a straight audience of like, because I think very often it's very hard for like outsiders to understand the way a drag persona and a works. Cause it's not like, mm-hmm. I mean, you're playing a character, but it's not like you're playing Hamlet, because you're playing a character that is like largely an extension of yourself. Yeah. And there's often a question of like, which is the more authentic. And I think like, again, in the 1995 Hollywood movie, it's just like, it's just simpler to have them each play one character. And this way we get to throw them around in like, you know, kind of like bedtime chiffon nonsense rather than them just kind of like hanging out in like undershirts.
Also, I think like, isn't it in Priscilla is the only one that even acknowledges AIDS existing?
Does Priscilla acknowledge AIDS?
Only, so they don't talk about it existing, but that's what's written on their bus in graffiti is AIDS go home or something.
I wrote it in my notes. That's so true. They stop somewhere and someone like writes in their bus in pink or red, not pink, definitely not pink. That'd be a mixed message. Go home, AIDS fucker. Yeah, yeah. I do remember reading a while ago, it was like an interview with one of like someone who like worked at the studio that got to Wong Fu Made, and he was queer. And just kind of talking about the fact that actually in 95, it was like, for him, it was important. And it was a really big deal to have a movie with three gay main characters that wasn't about AIDS, because like in the mid 90s, that was such the, like, Philadelphia had come out and like AIDS documentaries were starting to come out in the early 90s. So like, that was so like the visual image of gayness. So to have this like, you know, like very like positive, fun, light movie that's not about AIDS, I can see that kind of being like a political thing.
I know. And isn't that interesting though? Because it's like, in some ways, it feels more like you're just painting over go home AIDS fucker with purple. Like, it's still there. Ooh. Like, so like, you don't have to, again, you don't have to make the movie a quote unquote AIDS movie, or like that is about the characters dealing with AIDS or getting it or whatever. But then it's kind of bizarre where it's like, oh, so does it just not exist? Like, this isn't, for the time, it's a huge thing happening. You would think it would be like, something would be going on. I guess it's like, or are we just existing in a world where Wesley Snipes is a beautiful woman?
I mean, I really do think that, like, there's a couple of places where To Wong Fu plays with, like, the concept of reality. Okay, so, like, there's a scene, I didn't think we were gonna hear this quickly, but there is a scene at the very witchcraft. End. Witchcraft?
Where they're...
I'm doing a gesture. So, okay,
where they're decorating?
No, although that's... Oh, yeah, okay, that's another.
I'm gonna talk about that.
You talk about that one first. Go.
Oh, okay, well, there's... There is a scene where they've decided, like, they're going to be there a few days. They're staying at this motel in fucking Smithtown or whatever. And they decide, they're like, okay, well, if we're going to be here for a few days, we need to spruce up the digs. So they're like, they're decorating their motel room that starts to literally incorporate magic, like the dark arts. Like, at one point, Chichi Rodriguez like wiggles her nose and a light turns on. They like go to throw something at the wall and suddenly it's like arranged into a pattern and hung up. Like there is actual, like an actual just witchcraft break in the movie that is never acknowledged or spoken about. I will say that to me read way more as camp than, than a maybe absurdity, but I believe you said you had another one.
It definitely walks the line for sure. Yeah, there's a scene at the very end where Chi-Chi has been, there's this boy in town who sees John Leguizamo in a dress and goes, I'm in love with you.
Which I buy.
Okay, fair. Chi-Chi's been flirting with this like local boy and at the behest of
Bobby Ray.
But Starker Channing's daughter, Bobby Lee, don't worry, they address it, is in love with Bobby Ray. And so at the very last minute, Chi-Chi kind of like steps aside and says, I'm going to let you have him. And the drag queens teach Bobby Lee how to get a man by acting like a drag queen. And they give her a makeover so she looks like a 12-year-old ballerina. And they're outside together and he comes up, like Bobby Ray comes up to Bobby Lee or vice versa, who the fuck knows. And like, oh, you're pretty. Let's, you know, and then says like, they're just in the middle of a town square at night and says, would you like to dance? And he takes her hand and they start dancing and out of nowhere comes music. And then we pan across and like one by one, the townspeople pair up and start dancing in the middle of the town to music coming from absolutely nowhere. And then it like pans up to the three queens on a balcony, just being like, sometimes it just takes a fairy. And then they burst into choreographed music.
Yes, they do the full doo-wop, like right arm, left arm, shimmy, turn, something, something. Yes.
But it's just like, would you like to go out sometime? It's not, are you free for dinner? It's right here, right now, 9 p.m. on a Tuesday. Would you like to dance? And the music just happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think realism is played fast and loose in this universe.
Yeah, I think it's funny that in some ways, like a lot of the most unrealistic parts of To Wong Fu are the parts that have been kind of straight washed for a mainstream audience. Whereas I think some of the most unrealistic, like it's like, oh, like the town is unified by dance and like whatever, like it's like so kind of corny, like the absurdity of like no one thinks that they're drag queens or whatever. But then like Priscilla, the like what is the least realistic is like to me like pure camp. Like it's Felicia on the roof of the van like multiple times, truly like if a drag queen performs in the woods and no one's watching, like is just on the top of this bus doing a number. Everyone else they didn't even pull over the van so her friends could watch. This is like they're all driving, no one is watching, she's just on the roof strapped to a chair that becomes a shoe with this beautiful like this long fucking material like billowing behind her, and it's like fantastic.
Yeah,
and that to me, that's a gay.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only, I think that's the only scene where I like Felicia. I really don't like Felicia as a character.
Yeah, like there are definitely parts of her personality, like, I did, but I don't know why.
I mean, I think we are, if this was the Spice Girls, Felicia would be obnoxious Spice. Like, it's kind of her defining characteristic.
Yes, and I really like the idea that Mitzi gets along with both of them. I very much identified as a Mitzi in that way. That sure. I'm like, oh, no, I like the, I can like both. Like, I can like Bernadette, the like wise, older trans woman with like depth and gravitas, and the piece of shit in the crop top being like, let's listen to ABBA. Like, it's like, they like, and Mitzi even kind of changes who she, like, suddenly she starts laughing weird. They have like a weird laugh. They laugh together. Mm. But then like when she's with Bernadette, she's like, yes.
Maturity.
Yeah.
It was really interesting to see just the fact, so like Felicia's obsessed with ABBA and Bernadette is so salty about anyone mentioning ABBA. And it's like, oh, every generation is pissed off. It's like, this is so like, I can see with like Lady Gaga or Madonna. This thing of like,
all of the Madonna gays were so annoyed with Lady Gaga.
She also has a turd that she carries around from one of the lead singers of ABBA, which I thought was such a great detail. And actually, again, it made me like her more because in its own way, it gave her depth.
I know. Again, like at some point, when this podcast is a viral sensation, on the merch, we'll just be like, we'll be select notes without context because yes, one of mine is just, oh my God, ABBA turd. And I want that on a shirt.
Avatard.
Yeah.
Why don't we take a break?
And then when we come back, I think we do have some fodder for some problems in the attic.
Absolutely. Although don't start a fire in the attic. There are flowers up there.
There are flowers. I was just going to say that. Up to the see some problems in the attic, kind of like how Mayor of Easttown went up to find her dead son. So do we want to start with Priscilla boxes or Tu Wong foxes?
Let's do some Priscilla boxes.
Okay.
Mind the glitter.
So I think definitely one of the loudest moments of like, whoa, in the same vein as good old Tiki from Another Gay Movie, is Bob's wife. I don't remember her name. I'm sure they gave her one, but like barely. So I'm not gonna feel bad about not knowing it. She, like, I wanna say like Francine, but like that doesn't track.
I'm gonna look
it up. So I will, okay, there were things about this character that I would be willing to like accept today, but like with some big adjustments. So basically she is presented as like a mail order bride from the Philippines, and all she really does is kind of like yell and like what I would say skank around. Like she's just kind of like angry and horny and like it isn't really anything, just not a real person at all. And then like as when the drag queens are performing at the bar, they're performing at a local bar, she has escaped. She has broken into a locked drawer where her husband hides her ping pongs to do ping pong show, like one would see in like the red light district of Thailand or whatever, where like she's shooting ping pong balls out of her vagina at the bar. And then she just kind of like leaves him and takes off. So it's definitely like,
it's not great. Yeah, I also, although I remember this character a little differently, and I will say she had a little more agency than I recalled.
Okay, yeah.
Because, yeah, so I mean, yes, she's coded as this kind of like over-the-top, wild, manic person. Like, we get a flashback that she basically, that Bob married her in a blackout, and she's kind of like refusing to leave him alone, so he just kind of has to take her with him. He's always kind of telling her to like shush and calm down. She's not allowed to go to the bar, he says, and we think maybe that she's an alcoholic, but it turns out when she goes to the bar, she just kind of like does a ping pong show and is generally sexual. And yes, that everyone at the bar is into it.
And that's the part to me that I think is really funny. Like, there is something funny to me about like someone who does a ping pong show. You think of a ping pong show as less of like a creative expression, as much as like this thing for tourists. So like, it could actually be like empowering to be like, I do my ping pong show for me.
Yeah.
Like, I love this ping pong show and like, I love doing it. And like, I may be in America now and like, this may not be the vibe in like rural Montana. Oh wait, they're in Australia. Whoops, wrong movie. But like, you like, I'm still gonna do it, and that I like of just like, oh god, you can't bring her to the bar, she'll do her ping pong show, like that is funny to me. So I did laugh at it. To me, it was just like the performance was just like so heavy-handed that I'm like, this doesn't feel like anything other than like a stereotype. And
I think the fact that she speaks in broken English and is generally portrayed as being just kind of a wild woman.
Yes.
And the fact that Bob basically keeps her under lock and key, but we're supposed to read Bob as this super down to earth nice guy.
Well, he keeps the ping pong balls under lock and key.
She's not allowed to go out. She's not allowed to go to the bar. And he does tell her to shut up a lot, or just like kind of shushes her a lot. But he's going to embarrass
her.
That's
true. That's true.
Another fun thing about this, the actress who plays the wife, is that she played Rita Repulsa in the Power Rangers movie. The 90s one. It's not Elizabeth Banks.
Good for her.
Yeah. Do you have any other?
What has her brother done?
For me lately.
Any other problems in the attic for Priscilla?
For Priscilla? I have one, but again, it's like, it's a half packed box.
I feel like I probably have the same half box, but I am going to use my maybe traditional half box argument if it's the same half box.
It is, and I agree with you on this, but I after you.
So consistently, or at least like multiple times, Felicia, as we would say now, like dead names Bernadette, calling her Ralph. And she does it once and there doesn't seem to be much of a reaction. The second time she does it, Bernadette certainly notices and is like, what did you just say to me? Like, never, do not ever call me that again. And they get into a physical fight where Bernadette like beats up Felicia. Then I feel like behind her back, Felicia almost like goes to call her Ralph a couple times. Mitzi, the other one, is kind of like, cut it out, cut it out. So it's unfortunate that at the end of the movie, when it's like, and we've all changed, or like, we have been changed for good. Felicia looks out the bus window as they're driving off and it's like, bye, Ralph. Like, so again, like this would be my half box argument of like a character's point of view, like, Felicia is like shitty and obnoxious, and like shitty and obnoxious people say shitty and obnoxious things. And for that time, now I think we're all lucky enough to hear, especially with social media, way more people's stories. So you get to hear people talk about like what it really feels like to like have a dead name, have people refer to you as a name you don't use anymore, like seeing pictures or having that stuff brought up. However, it is still like, it's a little half box, as like, maybe if it was being made now, if you wanted an audience to still like Felicia and root for her, you would probably not want those scenes in, or if she were to do it, that she would then learn by the end.
Yeah, totally agree. It's like, it's definitely yikes when she does it, but at the same time, it's never coded as being acceptable behavior.
Yeah, it's not like they're like, oh, ha ha ha.
Yeah, like they don't, it's not casual. She uses it in really aggressive ways. We are definitely, I think, supposed to be a little more Team Bernadette in general in terms of being a more reasonable person.
Until she lip syncs.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think similar, like, I wish the stakes of that gesture were maybe, like, underlined a little more, and, like, I think, but, like, again, for an indie movie from the early 90s, I kind of understand why.
Do you have any problems in Julie Newmar's attic?
Julie Newmar's attic has some problems.
Yeah.
One is just that there is a lot of casual to direct racism amongst the girls, particularly yes. directed at Chi-Chi.
Yes, that was, yeah.
I like, they're just like, they constantly refer in a demeaning way to Chi-Chi's Latinness. You know, when they meet her and she's crying, Noxie says, she's Latin, you don't want to get messed up in that Latin mess. When Robin Williams meet her, he calls her my little pinata. Robin Williams hands her a card and Yuvita snatches it out of her hand and says, no, it's English. There's a scene where Chi-Chi like runs away for some reason and Noxie says, oops, she's running for the border.
Vita, and then there's like a fight that gets like more directly and like aggressively racist. Yes.
And then they kind of hurl some racial.
Yeah,
it gets pretty bad. So that's a big one. Yeah. And there's not really a silver lining to that. I just would love for them not to do that anymore.
I would agree, because it's like, in a lot of ways, it never really gets addressed. It's just like how they speak together, how they speak to each other. And like, certainly sometimes there is that like familiarity with like...
It's interesting too, that it's like, Noxima and Vita are old friends and they don't do it to each other. But they're both doing it to Chi-Chi, who they have just met. So it's not really this like, it doesn't come across as terribly like just kind of joshing a friend.
Right.
It's racializing us. Because
they also like don't like her. Like, or it's like when they are like, they're having a harder time getting along with her. So it's not so much like, haha, I love you. It's like, you're annoying and I'm going to bring this up.
Yeah. You're annoying. And on top of everything else, you're Latin.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm good. Yeah. I'm mad and racist.
Yeah. This isn't necessarily a problem for me, but I did read, I was reading up, and John Leguizamo on the 25-year anniversary of this was like interviewed and said that if they remade the movie, he would want Chi-Chi specifically to be played by a trans actress. Because he, apparently of these characters, Chi-Chi has been kind of the most embraced by trans viewers and is generally seen as coded as trans, which I think makes a ton of sense.
Yeah.
Her drag is way more everyday. She kind of just wears like a wig and like a casual dress, as opposed to like the other two who truly look like they're ready for the runway.
Yes. Like her walking in the field or whatever with Bobby Ray.
Yeah.
And kind of the way she talks about like just wanting someone to love, like, yeah, there is a lot of like, I just want someone to see me for the woman I am and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, again, in 95, I don't think it's an issue because they are kind of written distinctly as drag queens in a weird, simplistic way, but yeah. I think that's definitely a good note, from Mr. Leguizamo, the ally. So that was cute. This is not a box. This is actually a different segment, but it pivots well between box and it's kind of a history corner.
Oh, I might have a demi box.
Please.
Okay. Just a quick demi box. I would say that like more so in Tu Wong Fu, to kind of keep the light mainstream movie vibe for Bobby Ray and Bobby Sue Beer Can, like they, for me, it's that like, it's the way that characters are allowed to change and be forgiven. That's kind of like, it definitely wraps a pink bow on things. Like there are the like five guy, like kind of like young guys in the town who are about to sexually assault Chi-Chi. And then like later they learn manners and then they're like good boys. And like the same way that we're like, it's like Stockard Channing Queen escapes an abusive relationship with her husband at the time, Virgil. He leaves town, comes back with the sheriff who survived the pushing, and they're there together. Like he has kind of like connected the dots and brought him to the town to like expose the drag queens. And when Stockard Channing speaks up for herself, he does like that look acting of kind of like, oh, wow, have a good life. All with like a series of like raised eyebrows and like smiles, and then like gets in his car to leave. So it's like he is wishing her well and like has no plans to like come back for the hotel they own together or anything. It's just like he's like, I did you dirty, but I wish you all the best.
Like most abusers, as soon as you call me out on it in the most casual way, I agree and I have no follow-up.
Yeah. So I guess it's kind of that. But it's like, obviously the movie is very fluffy. It's like, it's Fluffy the Vampire Slayer. It would be kind of weird if then there was like a whole thing where like, and then he comes back or it's like, no, we're done. But it is a little bit like, okay, are we going to have a scene where someone's almost gang raped and then we're like, but they just needed to learn how to say good morning, ladies.
I totally agree. And that is exactly what I was about to kind of talk about in a slightly different way, but I think it is a good transition. So so as I alluded to earlier, and as you just said, when the queens come, so the queens arrive, I think Saturday. The queens arrive Friday night and they leave Monday morning.
Okay.
By the
end, I was like, who cares, Cameron? What the fuck? You're like, and a Friday is back then was known. And I'm like, oh my God, we're in the weeds here. Okay.
Named after the god Freya, which is symbolic. No. Okay. I have a list of miracles the queen performed because everyone in this town has a problem and everyone's problem can essentially be solved through drag. Yes. So there is a little old lady who apparently hasn't talked in 20 years. She's really into old movies. Drag queens are into old movies. Noxzema is just kind of listing off Dorothy Dandridge's filmography. And all of a sudden the old lady starts talking for the first time and they become best friends. Cure her muteness. They give all the women in the town a makeover. Everyone gets a full makeover. The group of potential would-be rapists, Noxie kind of like roughs up and gives them a lecture, and then all of a sudden they're the politest people in town.
And they wear more vibrant colors.
The young man who runs the thrift store that is the scene of the makeover has a debilitating stutter, and we can tell from his drab clothes, low self-esteem. Vita gives him a book that she likes, and it cures his stutter in about 2 minutes.
And okay, also, did you notice when he put on like the 60s pants? And I'm like, you have a fat fucking dick. And I counted that as a dick.
I'm glad you got something out of this movie. They casually, almost off screen, turned the restaurant into a cafe. Yes. It's such a throwaway line where all of a sudden the restaurant has this like big patio and the owner's like, thank you, Ms. Vita, you helped my restaurant. I'm like, when did this happen? They turn the sad yearly social into this like epic block party. They fix up Bobby Ray and Bobby Lee.
They fix up Blythe Danner and Cafe man. Guy.
Yep. And as you mentioned, Carol Ann, who's played by the incomparable, the unstoppable, the luminescent Stockard Channing, is in a kind of dark, abusive relationship with her husband. He is assaulting her. Vita walks in on the assault, beats up Virgil, kicks them out of the house, and for no particular reason, that is when Carol Ann decides that she is just no longer going to be abused anymore and is fine now.
Yes.
So yeah, the town is completely transformed by the end. So there is a bit of a history of this kind of story when queer stories are marketed to straight people. The idea that the value of queerness is to make over heterosexuality and to just kind of like either spice up your life or make it more interesting or generally make it better. This is kind of subtly the plot of Rocky Horror. Janet and Brad are too drab, but because of their encounter in the castle, they get sexy and they become more interesting. This is absolutely Queer Eye, especially the first version.
Yes.
And like a lot of the appeal, both on screen and behind the scenes, of Drag Race is this. I mean, like all of the makeover episodes they do, and increasingly the way the show is marketed to young girls, the idea that drag is not really about the queer experience or queer art form, is that the real value of drag is to kind of just transform the self-esteem of straight people through buying cosmetics and clothes. And so like this is the issue with the world of Wong Fu, is that the girls don't have a ton of their own agency or hopes and dreams. They exist.
Yeah, like they don't make over themselves really at all.
We get a little like a half-hearted, they all become better people for helping the straight people. Sucker Channing says, I love you, and Vita's never heard that before. Noxie apparently didn't trust people, though it didn't really come up until the end where she said, I'm gonna trust people now.
She's like, to answer the question on everyone's mind, I can finally trust again. And we're all like, huh?
It was in the coffee shop scene. And Chi-Chi is a little less self-involved. But yeah, none of the girls really, they're not changed. They don't really want anything except to help everyone. They really are kind of the fairy godmother characters. Like, I'm just here to make Cinderella's dress. And that's all I want from the situation. And now that I've done that, I'm fulfilled.
Yeah.
And that, I think, does, like, that is a larger issue because it does, I think, it creates this really conditional kind of acceptance. And when we say that, like, queer representation is broader and more accepting, it's like, okay, but if the only way queer people are accepted or allowed to be visible is if they kind of give you something or they are a benefit to straightness, and they perform an important function to straightness.
Yeah, it's like acts of service versus like when then people will be like, oh, but I don't want it thrown in my face, like people kissing mm-hmm. or holding hands.
Yeah.
Like, of which there is none in this movie.
No one has a sexuality except for Chi-Chi, and Chi-Chi's sexuality is actually turns out to be her worst quality.
Yes.
I mean, like, in the context of Drag Race, it does piss me off because, like, one of the ways Drag Race has really expanded and become more popular is by downplaying its queerness and by more intentionally trying to appeal to straight audiences. And I think, like, that kind of sucks for me as a queer viewer.
So, okay. So I know that this is not the movies, but I don't necessarily feel that I will say, when my friend was watching the first season of Drag Race and messaged me, did they really just give them brass knuckles as a prize? I thought, oh, wow, that would not fly here today. Mm. But like, what do you think is, in what ways is it like, becoming any less queer?
I think...
Which I understand is hard to kind of pinpoint.
Yeah. But... like a lot. So a lot of it is actually more in the kind of like marketing and promotion stuff.
Okay.
So the way that the marketing is actually specifically targeting young straight women, DragCon
for sure.
There's a piece, it's in my book. This writer has went to the first four drag cons and kind of tracked the reduction of queer content in Rue's keynotes. And by the fourth one, she like basically doesn't mention it at all. And it's all about kind of like self-help and energy.
Well, and that, but that's also just her.
That is. I mean, I think a lot of it actually has to do, and this is really subtle, and I would have to work to actually prove this. But I actually think I was watching season six. So not even that old a season, but I was watching season six a few weeks ago, and the way the runway functioned was a lot. People just kind of wore the drag they brought from home. And there was a much bigger function. There was a much bigger focus on kind of like them as performers or them as drag personalities. And I actually think that the more recent focus on the runway needing to be very legitimately high fashion.
Right.
Actually does speak to this is being marketed as a really specific product for consumption, and we need drag queens to be Barbie dolls because that's what straight girls want to
buy.
Not that gay men don't appreciate high fashion or consumerism, obviously that's not the case, but I think a lot of people have kind of talked about the way that Drag Race USA has kind of lost a lot of that roughness and is a little too glossy.
Yeah.
I think that is indirectly and directly the result of kind of courting a straight audience and trying to kind of prove the value of drag by its appeal to straight people. Whereas I think, you know, like UK is still kind of a lot more like, I think the early seasons of Drag Race and Drag UK really just kind of document an existing queer culture. Whereas more recent seasons of Drag Race have actually adapted queer culture for straight consumption. And I think To Wong Fu does lay some of that groundwork.
Yes. And Priscilla is season one and To Wong Fu is season 12.
100%. Like I think Priscilla is a much more authentic movie, and it's not necessarily super worried about the way straight audiences are going to be able to understand this.
No. Do you want to do some little like closing thoughts?
Yeah.
So there's a really great like shutter down like moment in Priscilla where Bernadette says to like an angry homophobe in like a small bar, listen here, mullet. And then she says, why don't you light your tampon and blow your box apart? And that's just like, it was just really funny.
I was watching I watched this with friends this time. And we ended up having a bit of a discussion on the physics of blowing up your vagina with a tampon. And my friend Joanna confirmed it is unlikely to work.
Also, when they meet the wife of Mitzi, who's like very much like a fag hag type, she's like, you guys are on in 10. And someone says, sweetheart, you've been on since you were born.
There's a line where when they go to a used car lot to get the car they're going to drive in. And Vita sits in the Cadillac, which is like a convertible. And she says, oh, I feel like Miss Jane Mansfield in this car. And like Noxie, without missing a beat, is just walking by and says, ooh, Jane Mansfield, not a good auto reference. I can tell. Do you know who that is? Do you know what that is? Do you need context?
Yeah, I do.
Jane Mansfield was an actress in the 60s. She was in a car accident and she was decapitated.
LOL.
And she's also Mariska Hargitay's mother.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't know who her brother is.
I also was like, is Robin Williams in this as a callback to The Birdcage? Is that out yet?
Okay, so no, this Birdcage was 2 years later. Robin Williams was seriously considered for Vita, but didn't want to shave his body because he's notoriously hairy.
Oh.
So the funny thing about this movie is they could not find a director.
Okay.
But when they actually started casting, everyone in Hollywood wanted to be in this movie.
Interesting. Yeah. I feel like that's why Blythe Danner was still in it, because in my mind I'm like, there's no way this isn't that you auditioned for Carol Ann and didn't get it, because this part is not doing you justice. Like, you literally just chew gum and then fall in love.
She's the town gossip.
Yeah, she has moments, but she like does. It's yeah. Not I also liked that potentially maybe the step one in becoming a drag queen was just saying the Serenity Prayer. Did you pick that up?
Yes.
Yeah. And Gringo with a pinga made me laugh. Oh, I also just love near the end where like Chi-Chi's in the car and the women are saying goodbye. And she's like, oh, this is just like Princess Laritza when she gets locked in the cabinet. And like, and then one of them just goes, well, anyway, just like the townswoman.
Oh yeah, because Chi-Chi is obsessed with like Latin novellas and is always like reading them and like going off about Princess Laritza.
Yeah, they were very fun, very similar, different enough, continue to merge in my brain.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think they should do a remake that is a mashup.
I think so too. Well, that's the end of Pride Month.
Oh, I hope you all had a really good Pride. Thank you for spending it with us. Yeah.
If you liked what you heard, please make sure to subscribe, like us, write a review. It helps more people find us.
And if you'd like to send us any movie suggestions or just say hi, you can email us at videoqueenspod@gmail.com or find us on Instagram at videoqueenspod.
Thanks so much for listening and happy Pride.
Bye.
Bye. You can hear the drums from Pandora.